Welcome to Angel Talk Radio Live with your hosts, Jim and Sandy Young. Welcome, everyone. I am Reverend Sandy.
And I am Reverend Jim.
Welcome to Angel Talk Radio Live. Our show is sponsored by the Living Light Center, a church of faith and healing. For anyone interested, Jim and I do personal readings. And if you'd like to have a personal reading, you can call 304-567-3354 or email sandysangeltalk@aol.com. That's sandysangeltalk@aol.com. Well, welcome everyone to Angel Talk. We have an exciting show here for you today on the Essenes and the Dead Sea Scrolls. But before we get started, I'd like to do a little reading here for you. So here we go. We are in a time when intensity to everything is happening. Small issues are growing to be big ones. Your nervous system is being pushed to its limits. Your sleeping patterns are off. The pressure you feel is increasing. All of these things are forcing change to everyone. And how you deal with it is the important factor. Many will become aggressive or angry or desperate or ill and will respond in a negative way. This will only draw more of the negative energies to you. You must have the strength, faith, and belief in God that you can get through these tough times without allowing it to control you. The planet is facing these pressures also. The sun is creating more solar activity, which results in coronal mass ejections and solar winds. These can create problems if they strike the planet. So as we have seen, tornadoes, hurricanes, typhoons, cyclones, all resulting in a lot of devastation to people's homes, businesses, and land. But change must happen. We are still in a period of time where more winds will happen. We must allow God's light to fill our lives, and we must let go of the lower emotions and energies that hold us back, so that we can move to a higher level of consciousness. It is a time when prayer and meditation is of great importance. It will help give you the insights and guidance you need. Try to hold a positive attitude, even the toughest of times, and know God is always with you. Blessings.
And yet, even the Master himself, you know, understood that when it came to God, that one has to stand up. There's an old part of Genesis where it talks about creation. And one of the big things is that creation does not occur if everything stands still. Now, God can create within his own mind an entire universe, if he wishes to, but to bring it into the material realm, there has to be movement. And so God moved, and this universe, which is considered a child universe or experimental universe, came into being. And it's that way today. If you have your favorite car, and you feel like that you asked God for, you know, transportation that was, you know, reliable, and that's what came along, and you were like, oh, I couldn't have asked for anything better. Well, keep asking, because it's not about getting something else, but unless light is still continuously added to whatever it is that you are needing, then it will fall apart. It will, you know, go the way of breaking up, because it's a restoration, we'll call it, of light. And it has to be constantly restored. For those who pass from this side to the other side, if they are not, you know, a part of God's children or a part of God's love, they don't love God, and it's not God's choice. God loves everybody. the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever. But if they should so choose to just not go there, when they get to the other side, they will have no way of being restored with light. And so what happens is, instead of being able to go through that light and have the light of God, which is encompassing all things, be able to keep replenishing you, almost like feeding you, you know, you will find that little by little, you begin to come apart, so to speak, because you have nothing to restore, you know, you. And what happens basically is some find themselves, we'll say, in like a pit, a dark, deep pit, and they don't know where they are. They just know that they can't move, they can't go anywhere, they can't see anything, and it's not fun. Some people sleep. You know, Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, said that some will say, like Hitler, he will sleep probably for, maybe over 1,000 years before he could possibly wake up and the consciousness of the people be high enough to be able to, you know, even have a place in society for him to work out his karma. So, and that's probably a very, you know, lucid estimate, 1,000 years. But I remember Edgar Cayce doing a reading for, or counseling for, one woman, and it was her husband, and he had been dead 11 years. And Cayce said, he's just now waking up or coming to the realization that he's been dead for 11 years. And so it's in everything. Everything must be in a constant state of restoration. And in this planet right now, there is so much opposition. I mean, every time you turn around, there's opposition. And that's why you can't turn. Look straight ahead and decide on which way I'm going and ask God to guide you and take you by the hand and take one step at a time forward. And don't look left, because if you look left, something you've wanted very badly for a very long time is going to be there, and you're going to get distracted. If you turn right, something you've wanted for an awful long time is going to be there. And if you, even if you were to get it, it doesn't have the light of God in it, so it's nothing to restore it. So it's going to break pretty quickly. It may even come out of the box broken. And the thing about it is, when you're in the center, if you gain something simply because you want it so badly, and you don't care how you get it, as long as you get it, there's a swing of what we call the pendulum, you know? And to me, it actually looks like a pendulum swing, except it's very sharp. And when it swings to the right, and then swings back to the left, whatever it was you gained because you wanted it so badly, you didn't care how you got it, then it not only takes from you what you gained, but it oftentimes will take more than what you gained. And so every time you do that, you lose what you got and you lose a little more. Well, how long can you do that? How long can you keep doing that? And that's why it's not the same as it used to be. Everything's changed. And we have to come to a realization, and this is probably going to shock you because you probably don't hear it very often, but it is true. Jesus on the cross said, just as he was giving up the ghost, he said, Father, it is finished. And it was finished. He had finished it. It was finished for us. You know, I mean, it was the mercy, the grace, and the way. He was the truth in the middle and the life. And that's what we should be walking as. And in the middle, on the left is the way, the right is the life, and in the center is the truth. I had somebody ask me the other day, they said, well, but isn't there more than one truth? They said, don't you have your truth and I have my truth? And I said, you know, I've been asked that a lot of times. I've been asked that for 20, 30 years by people at times. And I wish I could just say to you, you know, of course, you've got your truth and I've got mine. But in reality, you know, I can no longer say that. You know, I have to be able to be honest and upfront and tell you what I do believe through many, many, many walks, many, many, many trials and tribulations and you know, having went through it to gain the knowledge, or the way, and then the truth in the middle, which is wisdom. And then finally, the Holy Spirit gives you, you know, the understanding. And when you get the understanding, you get a peace that passes all understanding. Your heart will overflow. It's something that once you get, you won't ever want to let go of it.
Oh, this is true.
And we're in that. Right now, you know, what the Holy Trinity and the Christ is saying to us is that if you look around yourself, everything you see, none of it's real. It's all an illusion. Now, to a human mind, that's kind of far out there, isn't it? Well, is it? I mean, you know, there are some, I mean, high-level scientists that believe that if you're sitting on a chair and you walk outside your house, you know, and down the steps and start down your driveway, the chair is no longer there. It's only there when you believe it's there and you sit on it. Now, I can't attest to that because how would I know if the chair actually did disappear? I don't know. But I do know this, that I lay down things at times and I know exactly I'm going to lay right here because I have to make sure I know where it's at so I won't forget. And I walk 20 feet away and come back and it's gone. And I have learned that the only way I'm going to be able to find that again, even though I knew where it was, is through patience. Patience is the aspect of fourth dimension. It is an aspect of time. So, honestly, somebody said, well, what is patience? I know what you mean, you know, patience. I mean, somebody, you know, jumps in front of you in the line. Well, you don't get mad or angry at them. It's more than that. Casey said, you know, step back and watch yourself go by. Watch what you do. And you can train yourself then to not do what creates issues for you. And it's the fourth aspect of time. So if you wish to be in a place, a vibration, a frequency that is just a little higher and it doesn't have as much chaos, it allows you to be able to have more love, overflowing, and humbleness, then that's what patience is. And when you gain that, you won't ever want to let go of it. It's the most beautiful thing you could ever imagine.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the Essenes, let's talk about them. Jesus was a member of a strict, pious, religious sect. It was known as the Essenes, and that this group prepared the way for his birth. Edgar Casey predicted that the writings of the sect would one day be discovered near the Dead Sea. This information I'm sharing with you comes from Kirk Nelson. And in 1947, 2,000-year-old scrolls were discovered by the Bedouin shepherds in caves on the northwest shore of the Dead Sea. We know them today as the Dead Sea Scrolls. They are the writings of the Essenes, and Edgar Casey accurately predicted where they would be discovered. The Dead Sea Scrolls describe the organization and the beliefs of the Essenes, who had a strict code of moral conduct, including ritual baptism. And for this reason, scholars have become convinced that John the Baptist was an Essene, and that his baptism of Jesus was an Essene ritual. The scrolls also show that the Essenes expected a Messiah who would come to lead the world to righteousness and destroy the wicked. And we know this Messiah as Jesus. There are three sects among the Jews. The followers of the first are the Pharisees, the second, the Sadducees, and the third, who pretend to severe discipline, are called the Essenes. And the Essenes are Jews by birth and seem to have a greater affection for one another than do the other sects. These Essenes, they reject pleasures as evil, but esteem continence and conquest of passion as a virtue. They are long-lived also, many of them living over 100 years because of the simplicity of their diet, and also, I think, because of their regular course of life. They make light of danger, and through the generosity of their mind, are above pain. And as for death, if it be for their glory, they esteem it better than living forever. And indeed, our war with the Romans gave abundant evidence of the greatness of their souls under trial, even though they were tortured and disfigured, burnt and torn to pieces, and experienced all kinds of instruments of torture, so that they might be forced either to blaspheme their legislator or to eat what was forbidden to them. Yet, they could not be made to do either of them. No, nor once to flatter their tormentors or shed a tear, but they smiled in their very pains and laughed those to scorn who inflicted their torments and reins up their souls with great hilarity or great enthusiastic acceptance, as though expecting to receive them again. Edgar Casey was asked, "What is the correct meaning of the term ascene?" And his answer was expectancy. And was asked, "The main purpose of the ascenes to raise up people who will be fit channels for the birth of the Messiah, who later will be sent out into the world to represent their brotherhood." See, the question was, were the ascenes called at various times and places, like the Nazarites, the school of prophets, you know, and were they a branch of the Great White Brotherhood, starting in Egypt and taken as members, Gentiles and Jews alike? And he answered, in general, yes. See, the term Essene meant expectancy, namely the expectant birth of the Christ child. So, the Essenes were involved with the school of prophets, which was established at Mount Carmel by Elijah. The studies were including astrology, numerology, phrenology, reincarnation. These are beliefs which were persecuted by the Sadducees, who did not believe in the immortality of the soul. And because of their study of astrology, the Essenes realized that the earth was about to change from the age of Aries to the age of Pisces, and that this change would bring with the birth of the Christ child. So every 2,165 years, the earth moves 30 degrees with respect to the background stars. And it is this action which moves the earth from one astrological age to the next. And this is called the precession of the equinoxes. The Essenes were aware that the religious symbols would alter with the change in the ages. So during the previous age, the age of Aries, the religious symbols revolved around the sign of Aries, a fire sign, which is symbolized by the ram. The religious rituals which were used then involved sacrificing rams on an altar of fire, and this took place in the Jewish temple in Jerusalem and is discussed at length in the Old Testament. But however, this new age, the age of Pisces, required new symbols and rituals, because Pisces is a water sign symbolized by the fish. And when Jesus came, he was the embodiment of the Piscean age. He was baptized in water, calmed the water, walked on the water, changed water into wine, and multiplied the fish and the loaves, and was called the Fisher of Men. In addition, he suffered martyrdom, and Pisces is the martyr symbol. So because the Essenes were aware of the changes in the astrological age and the expectant birth of the Christ child, they prepared 12 girls as possible channels for the birth, and Mary was one of the 12. Edgar Casey was asked some questions. Please describe the associate membership of the women in the Essene Brotherhood, telling what privileges and restrictions they had and how they joined the order and what their life and work was. And the answer was, this was the beginning of the period where women were considered as equals with the men in their activities and in their abilities to formulate, to live, and to be channels. So they joined by dedication, usually by their parents. And it was a free will thing all the way through. But they were restricted only in the matter of certain foods and certain associations in various periods, which referred to the sex as well as to the food or drink.
And even work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was asked, how did Mary and Joseph first come in contact with the Essenes, and what was their preparation for the coming of Jesus? And he answered, as indicated, by being dedicated by their parents. He was asked, please describe the process of selection and training of those set aside as holy women, such as Mary, and others as a possible mother for the Christ, and how they were chosen, and what was their life and work while they waited in the temple. And the answer was, they were first dedicated, and then there was a choice of the individual through the growth as to whether they would be merely channels for general services, for they were chosen for special services at various times. 12 of them. Remember, they came down from the periods when the school had begun, and when there were the activities in which there were to be the cleansings through which bodies were to become channels for the new race or the new preparation, these then were restricted. Of course, as to certain associations, developments and associations and activities and of the like. And we're speaking here of the 12 women, you see. And all of the women from the very beginning who were dedicated as channels for the new race. So the group we refer to here as the Essenes, which was the outgrowth of the periods of preparation from the teachings by Melchizedek, as propagated by Elijah and Elisha and Samuel. These were set aside for preserving themselves in direct line or choice for the offering of themselves as channels through which they might come the new or the divine origin.
Even the genetics. We don't want to forget that, too. It had to come through the lineage of David, King David. And going back even farther than that, through the lineage of Jacob, because there was Jacob and you know, his sons who became the tribes of Israel, and then there was his brother Esau. And so as you went through history, you know, you had Jacob and the 12 tribes of Israel, and you had Esau. Esau was all about, you know, the kill, all about, you know, the war, like take what I want. And the two sides, you know, living down through the years, Jesus, it was prophesied, had to come through the lineage of King David. Now, what did it take for that to happen? I mean, it was a ways down the road. I mean, it didn't just happen in a week. So, you know, for it all of it to occur, I mean, David had to take out the giant, Goliath. I mean, there was so many steps. And Esau, his lineage became the lineage of King Herod the Great, who slaughtered the children, 2,000 Hebrew children, on the night of Jesus' birth. So you see the two polarities, and yet Jesus had to come through that lineage, and every step of the way it was worked out to make sure that that occurred. And if it weren't for the Essenes, it wouldn't happen. Because, again, like you said, Sandy, the Essenes, it actually, they were way showers, but they were in every way Jewish, and they, you know, they did the ceremonies and all that, but they were more the spirit of the law rather than to the letter of the law. But they were also what one owned, everybody owned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, can you imagine, you really want to create a perfect world, then everybody owns everything. I mean, everybody, if there's food over here, it's food for everybody. If there's something somebody needs, well, anybody can use it. And so you don't get attached to any one thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so even when you said about it needing to wait is what the Essene word means, it's not a passive word. It's an active word. To wait was to move forward and to prepare the way. And don't think for a minute that, you know, that it happened in a week. It did not. And it went through probably several generations. And some of the higher level consciousness of the Essenes, they really started getting a little bit antsy. They started getting, you know, impatient, we'll say. You know, why hasn't it happened? I mean, can we do much more to make this happen or bring this about? Well, see, it's not what we do that brings it about. It's what we do for God. And then God can bring it about. Mm-hmm. And there had to be that understanding. And at first, you know, it was Mary's mother who got pregnant, and she was an immaculate, or she gave an immaculate conception, and that was Mary. And she came before the elders of the Essenes and told them, I am with child, but I have never been with a man. And they got all excited. Oh, my goodness, here it is. Finally, it's coming. And when Mary was born, they went into confusion. They were turning in circles. I mean, they didn't know what to do. They said, wait a minute, if it's supposed to bring in the divine masculine, then why would she, if she was an immaculately born, then why would she be a girl? Now, again, don't think that those things didn't occur. And, you know, always, you can't second guess God. You know, mm-hmm. Don't even try.
Right. And, you know, and it was asked, you know, how long was the preparation in progress before Mary was chosen? And the answer was 3 years. And then ask in what manner was she chosen? And it's answered as they walked up the steps.
Right.
You know, and Mary, you know, how old was she at the time when she was chosen?
14.
She was 4.
You mean chosen to become
right.
One of the
and as you recall, between 12 and 13, when designated as the one chosen by the angel on the stair. So
she was at the top, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was Gabriel.
Right. And Mary was chosen as the channel for the birth of Jesus as she climbed the temple steps during the Essenes morning prayer ritual. You know, it was asked, you know, give a detailed description for literary purposes of the choosing of Mary on the temple steps. And the answer was, the temple steps, or those that led to the altar. These were called the temple steps, and these were those upon which the sun shone as it arose of a morning, and where there were the first periods of the chosen maidens going to the altar for prayer, as well as for the burning of the incense. And on this day, as they mounted the steps, all were bathed in the morning sun, which not only made a beautiful picture, but clothed all as in purple and gold. And as Mary reached the top step then, there were the thunder and the lightning, and the angel led the way, taking the child by the hand before the altar. And this was the manner of choice. This was the showing of the way, for she led the others on this particular day.
And she had no idea that that was going to happen. She, like the rest of the girls, wanted or wished to be the one chosen, of course, but, you know, so did all the girls. But she was the twin soul of the one we know as Jesus. She was actually the actual twin soul. So it wouldn't have been any of the other maidens, though they were important, and they later became what one would call a disciple of Jesus. He had as many female disciples as he had male disciples. And actually, the females understood his teachings much easier than the men did. The men actually got angry sometimes because they didn't, number one, think that the women had any business, you know, being there, number one. Number two, you know, well, how come, you know, they seem to have the answers? I mean, well, you know, maybe they should have asked it in a different way. And some of them would get upset and they would leave the room. And it tells you that even with the Essenes being much different than the standard Jewish, you know, situations and celebrations and ceremonies, the Essenes did all of the things that typically the Jewish would do, but they didn't hold so strictly to every little precept and line. It was the spirit of the law. And they created a, so to speak, a preparation, a patience of preparation, and a way to live so as to create a channel for the divine to come into the material world. And so, when Mary was chosen, it had to be that way. She was the twin soul of that one known as Jesus. And a lot of people think it may have been, well, wouldn't it have been Mary Magdalena or another? No, it was the mother in this situation. It reversed itself, didn't it? In the beginning, when man fell, Adam, birthing from within without and pushing outward, and it took a little time to do that, created the one known as Eve from his own soul. And in the lifetime of Jesus and Mary, Mary took the Holy Spirit within herself and literally pushed from within without and birthed the divine masculine. It completed the cycle. And it had to be that way. It had to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, I hate to say it, but you've probably heard me say on here before that I'd be amazed if 100 years from now there's a male genetic on the planet. I hear you laughing, Sandy.
Yeah.
But it's because we come in positive. And if you look at it from a polarity point of view, most males are positive, like the poles of a battery. One's positive, one's negative. And isn't it funny that one's positive and the other pole is, it would represent the feminine and it's called negative. Or is there right, which represents the male, and what's the other side called? Wrong. You can see from a very long time ago, the masculine, the people in charge, don't think that it was an accident that they called it right and wrong, or positive and negative. But in reality, the most important of the two poles on a battery, whether it's the positive or the negative pole is the most important, more important than the positive ever will be. And so, they had to come in that way to complete that cycle or that circle. And we're completing the next piece of it.
Yeah.
So that we can take this body form that has not existed before. That was one thing that came out of the fall that honestly is a positive thing, but it wasn't foreseen. Mm-hmm. But this body form, it had to be able to hold, a high enough frequency and vibration in a very short time. Because in third dimension, like this planet is, so to speak, it's really more 2D, I think, than 3D. But third dimension, you only have 26,000 years before typically the scroll rolls up and everything pulls apart, and then it comes back together. And it comes back together in a way that allows for an upgrading of evolution. But humankind was not part of evolution and wasn't meant to be. But we came here because spiritual beings had become trapped, and they had no way of getting out of the material realm. They had forgotten who they were. And so if you're listening to this show right now, just know you volunteered. You volunteered for this mission.
Yeah.
And you were asked by the Christ himself to try to do something that had never been done before.
Yep. Yeah. Well, there was a few more questions that was asked of Edgar Cayce, Where was the wedding of Mary and Joseph? And the answer was in the temple there at Carmel. And where did the couple live during the pregnancy? Well, Mary spent most of the time in the hills of Judea, portions of the time with Joseph in Nazareth. And from there, they went to Bethlehem to be taxed or to be registered, and as you would term it. And as asked, was Jesus as a child also able to perform miracles, as the Catholic Church claims? And was he clairaudient, clairvoyant, And did he remember his past incarnations? You know, the readings tell us Jesus had past incarnations as Adam, Enoch, Melchizedek, Joshua, then Joseph, among others. And the answer came back after the first chapter of John, and you will see, and the world would be made flesh and dwelt among us. And as to the activities of the child, the apparel brought more and more the influences which today will be called a lucky charm or a lucky chance, not as a consciousness.
And so that's one of the reasons that in the scriptures it says, by his stripes you are healed. I believe that some of the clothing that they put on him as a child were the different colors of, you know, of the body's energy fields.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did that, it amplified his own abilities of energy and healing.
Right, because this began the consciousness with the ministry from the period when he sought the activities from the entrance into the temple and disputing or conversing with the rabbi at the age of 12.
Right.
And the seeking for the study through the associates with the teachers at that period.
Right.
And as a child, Jesus was taught by the leader of the Essenes, a woman Casey called Judy. And when Jesus grew older, he traveled to India, Persia, and Egypt to be taught by the great teachers of the time. And he was asked, tell us about Judy's teaching Jesus, where and what subjects she taught him, and what subjects she planned to have him study abroad. And the answer was the prophecies. Where? In her home. And when? During those periods from his 12th to his 15th to the 16th year, when he went to Persia and then to India. In Persia, when his father died, and in India, when John first went to Egypt, where Jesus joined him, and both became the initiates in the pyramid or the temple there. And this, what subjects did Judy plan to have him study abroad? And the answer was what you would today call astrology. So according to Edgar Casey's readings, the Great Pyramid in Egypt is not a tomb, but a monument built to stand for all times by the survivors of the destruction of the continent of Atlantis. It was built as a temple, and it is in this temple that Jesus and John the Baptist were initiated into the White Brotherhood of the Essenes. And when the Great Pyramid was opened in the 1800s, no body was found in the sarcophagus or coffin. This empty sarcophagus symbolizes Jesus' victory over the grave, since he broke the life and death cycle with his resurrection.
And it's funny, too. We, you know, were in that very same pyramid. And, you know, the gentleman that sets it the entranceway, when they get ready to open it, there were 150 people in line, and we were the first two. And he looked up at us, and he said, do you pray? And, of course, we both answered, absolutely. We both pray all the time. And he said, okay. And he said, go on, go in. And so we started in, and he held up his hand, and he held all 150 people that were waiting. He held them back while we went up the ascending passageway, which you can't do standing straight up. You mean you have to literally bend over almost halfway to go up that ascending passageway. At one time, there was a plug that blocked it that was made of granite. And it was said that if you held a certain frequency, that you could pass through the plug. That I can't attest to, but it had been broken and moved away by the time we went up the passageway. But once you got into the king's chamber, in the center of it, there was a hum. There was a go. And I mean, it was loud, and it was constant. And, well, if any of you know my wife, I mean, she was, the first thing she had to do was lay down in the empty sarcophagus. So there she is. I mean, she's over there, and she's got her hands folded against her chest, and I thought, you know, are you coming back out at some point, or do I just leave you there, you know? And so it was a very enlightening experience, no doubt about it. But when anyone went through that initiation, the lid was rolled on top. And they were in there for 3 days. And when the lid was rolled away, if someone came out of there alive, they were usually covered in a white dust. And it's believed that white dust is the philosopher's stone, or, you know, iridium erodium. And it literally is produced by the pituitary gland when there is high states of, you know, of exaltation, so to speak. And so that was the final testing that he and John did. And then he returned back home. Now, it says he was a Nazarene. I have always wondered, because your scientist will tell you, or archaeologist, you know, we really can't find a place that is really called Nazareth. You know, and to me, I personally believe that an Essene was a Nazarene. And so he was a Nazarene. And so they just, you know, changed that to being, you know, a Nazarene. And there may not have been an actual place called Nazareth. I don't know the complete answer to that. Do your own research and see. But, you know, there was, you know, a group of Roman soldiers that came to the compound where he was living when he was, you know, in his mid-20s. And they looked at the rolls, and one of them was Lucius. And he said, "I don't see your names on the rolls." And we were in Bethlehem, you know, at the time that the census was taken. He said, "I know." He says, "But I don't see him, his name on there." And Mary said he was born that night. Well, if you remember, 2,000 Hebrew children were killed that night. And they wanted to make sure they killed every one of them so that none escaped, so that the king that was anticipated would not be able to take his rightful place. And here stood the child in front of, or a young man in front of Lucius, who was in Bethlehem that night, and he looked at him, and, I mean, he realized, wait a minute, every child was killed. Well, except one.
Yeah. Well, another question that was asked of Edgar Casey was to please describe Jesus' initiations in Egypt, telling if the gospel reference to the 3 days and nights in the grave or tomb, possibly in the shape of a cross, indicate a special initiation. And the answer was, this is a portion of the initiation. It is a part of the passage through which each soul is to attain in its development, as has the world through each period of their incarnation in the earth. The record of the earth through the passage through the tomb or the pyramid is that through which each entity or each soul as an initiate must pass for the attaining to the releasing of the same.
So are you saying that everybody that wishes to attain that higher consciousness is going to have to go through 3 days of darkness?
Well, it's sort of indicating that, isn't it?
Yes. Just saying. So people need to realize that. That when it comes, and, you know, it's amazing to me that over this last 2 weeks, NASA has been announcing things that I wouldn't have, if you'd have bet me, I wouldn't have bet you in a million years that they would be announcing the things that they're announcing. But I just read an article just today, I think, or yesterday, that there is available in our view. Oops, hold on.
Well, you know, you also have seen that, you know, as indicated by the empty tomb, which has never been filled, you know, only Jesus was able to break the same as it became that which indicated his fulfillment. And there, as the initiate, he went out for the passing through the initiation by fulfilling as indicated in the baptism in the Jordan. He passed from that activity into the wilderness to meet that which has been his undoing in the beginning.
Yeah, he was tempted in every way that Adam was tempted.
Exactly. You know,
and he had to walk it all to get where he was. He had to walk every piece of it. Can you imagine? We don't like it when we have to walk a little piece of it, but he walked every possible scenario way more than once, you know, to be able to take it upon himself. And on that cross, the soul, spirit, and the physical body, all three separately, had to take all of that upon themselves separately and experience it separately, which is why it was cried out, you know, my God, why have I forsaken thee?
Yeah. And, you know, Jesus went out from John's baptism to the wilderness to meet the and overcome Satan, who had been Jesus' undoing in the beginning when he was Adam. You know, Satan had tricked Adam and caused death to enter into our consciousness. So
he tricked him?
And it became Jesus' fulfillment to overcome both death and Satan.
Well, what is the power? What is the power of the darkness? It only has one power. Mm-hmm. Has no power over anything, really, except unless you let it. If you you let it trick you, well, then it then has an empowerment.
Right.
But otherwise, it has no power, none whatsoever. God has no enemies. God has no, you know, nothing, no being out there that, you know, can oppose them. And us, us also, unless we let it. If we let it in, then and only then can Satan do those things or, you know, influence us to do those things that are displeasing.
Right. And, you know, all of this is symbolized in the Great Pyramid by the empty sarcophagus and the seven stones above it. The empty sarcophagus shows that there is no death, or that the spirit survives death. And the seven stones above the sarcophagus symbolizes the raising of energy through the seven endocrine centers during meditation and prayer. And this is how Jesus overcame death, by being attuned to the higher centers of consciousness. And this is also how each soul in the earth can develop and ultimately overcome death.
Now, you also said, if tell me if I'm wrong here, but you also said that he was represented by the Piscean, right? The Pisces?
Yes, he was in the Piscean, right.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, now, if we think about it, that's how time was kept track of. It was very important. We're not talking about your horoscope. We're talking about astrology. And it was the most accurate form of time that existed. I mean, kingships came and went with the zodiac. And, you know, if one family, their brother and his family were supposed to take over at a certain point, it was by the stars. It was guided by the stars. If you remember the Magi, it was the stars that they followed, you know, to find, you know, the baby Jesus. And he had to be born in Bethlehem because that's where all of the sacrificial lambs are born. So, and that's why he didn't have to enroll or be enrolled in the census. But he had to be in that location because all sacrificial lambs are born that way. Now, what is the zodiac right before Pisces?
Before it?
Uh-huh. It's Aquarian, isn't it?
Aquarian, I think. Yeah.
And what are we in?
Yeah.
We're in the Aquarian. So, it's the cycle. You go from the Pisces all the way around, you know, all the way around, until you come back through and you end up in the Aquarian Age, the water bearer. And it is the time of the Holy Spirit. It is also, you know, that time of being able to embody, you know, a Christ-like consciousness, because it is a trinity. It is the way, the truth, and the life. So you see, when somebody says to me, well, you have your truth, I have my truth, other people have their truth, there's only one truth, because there's only one God. Now, there is a growth that occurs in all of us towards that truth. And when we attain it, we can maintain our individuality, yet be one with the whole. And that is the beauty that Christ brought, that he brought into the material realm. And the Holy Spirit keeps it in movement through this time frame because she represents the water bearer. Don't let them fool you when you look at the pictures and you see a man with a water jug, okay? I mean, you got to remember that a lot of things were done by patriarchal. But she is the water bearer, and she There's the water. And what comes out of the water? There's not one thing that is material anywhere in the universe that doesn't birth out of the water first. And so that's why we are in the Aquarian Age, because we are finishing up that cycle. And it's so very important.
And we're coming out of the darkness. You know, Jonathan Conrad, about at the very end of the Bible, in the very last pages of the books of Revelation, the Dragon Wars, is finally brought to its final end. The inverted angel, the devil, Satan, the enemy, the dragon, will be vanished, and the power of evil will be gone. The good will prevail, and will never end. And the kingdom of God will then be manifested in its glory. Messiah, the Lamb, will reign upon the throne, and the will and purposes of God will be fulfilled. And then, that of which the Apostle Paul wrote, will be prevailed. And all the God's people will then see it and know. There will then be no more darkness, for the Lord God will be their light and the Lamb, their illumination, and all things will be made new. And there will be no more dragon than to rage against the children of Israel, the people of God, the creation of his hands. And no more will he terrorize the nations. No more will he wound or scar or mar or destroy. The darkness of the dragon will no longer obscure the light, nor will his evil ever again hide the face of God. There will be then no more wars, no more prisons, no more hatred, no more violence, no more invasions, no more terrorists, no more slaughters, no more holocausts, no more fear, no more pain, no more graveyards, no more sorrow, no more death, no more mourning, no more weeping, and no more pain.
Sign me up.
Yep. You know, the day of the dragon will then pass away.
Now, to get there, though, just even as Mary, on that top step, and Gabriel came to her, you know, she didn't just automatically go, all right, yeah, I got it. You know, she pondered it according to the Holy Writ. It says that she pondered that what happened on that top step for days. You know, is it true? I mean, why me? You know, I mean, who am I? I'm 14 years old, you know. And she married Joseph at 16, and he was way older than she was. And so there was an issue about that. And, you know, but God has his way of doing things for a particular reason. And both of them were of the Levite clan. And so therefore, it made Jesus automatically, you know, as he was taught, to be a high priest or to be a priest or a rabbi. When you listen to them tell you he was a carpenter, it is a misquote of the original Greek. I have looked it up. I have very carefully many, 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 many times. And they misquoted it. He wasn't a carpenter. There wasn't a lot of wood, if you think about it. And what wood they had, they hung people off of. So, you know, he was a rabbi. Everyone referred to him as rabbi. He wouldn't have been able to have read from the scrolls, the sacred scrolls in the temples, if he weren't a rabbi. And all of his disciples refer to him as rabbi, because that's who he was. He was of the Levite clan, and he was of the rabbis, as was King David and those before him.
Yes. And we have to remember, Jesus overcame the world by attuning to the Christ consciousness within.
And he offers us the same. If we can attune to him, then we can know ourselves as individual, yet be one with the whole. The way, the truth, and the life. Stand in the middle. And you've got the truth. And you'll gain. And through activity, you will gain the other two. The way and the truth and the life. And it's beautiful. I mean, the whole thing of how it came together. And, you know, and it worked. I mean, if we could do that again today, I mean, that's the only thing holding us back is that we don't want to give up what we got. I don't give up my car. Can I take it with me? You know, I mean, I just bought that car. Daggone it. You know, I mean, or that house. Or, you know, I wanted to get another house. It was just a little bigger before, you know, I had to go. And I remember we did a class one time, Sandy. Do you remember? And I told everybody that we'd gotten a message that in 10 minutes, planet was going to ascend. Was everybody ready?
Yeah.
And you had people say, can I go home and feed my dogs first? You know, or, you know, I mean, you'd be amazed at the excuses that came up. And that was why I did it. I wanted people to know that you got to be ready. You have to be ready. You have to be prepared.
We do.
And so we're this show was to lift you up and to help give you hope and know that God is going to lift you, and when he does, it's going to cause all of the illnesses and diseases to not be able to lift, and they'll be left crawling around on the ground. But he'll lift you up just enough that the body will be healthy, because it's hard to be spiritual when you are so sick you can't even push your buggy through the supermarket.
Yeah.
And he's going to do this for everyone, but the window will be short. Be ready. Be prepared. Be in the scene.
Well, Jim, I think we've come to an end of our time here.
Okay.
And so we want to thank all of you for joining us here on this radio show this week, and we do hope that you will join us again in 2 weeks.
And say your prayers for BBS. They are the most wonderful people, you know, here at the radio station that I've ever come to know. And, you know, they keep us laughing. You know, we're serious sometimes when we get ready to do our show. They give us, you know, by the time we're starting, we've got a smile on our face, and we're feeling ready to go. So may God bless them.
God bless.